Right, I am happy to be joined here by Caroline Spence, all the way. She is in Essex, England. She has an extensive career as an actress, a television presenter, a producer, a screenwriter, and also a published writer for several different magazines and journals. We are here to discuss her current project, which she produced and wrote the screenplay for, which is Casting Kill. And she's also got some other things in the works. Hello, everyone. Thank you for pressing play and listening and watching to this special edition of We Like Movies. As always, my name is Juan. My other buddies are not here, Kevin and Mark, but I'm very, very happy to be joined by my special guest here. We're going to be discussing her career, current projects, as well as some future projects. Before we get into that, please remember that you can check us out wherever you listen to your podcast, and please follow us, comment, subscribe, like, share, do all that good stuff. Show us some love so that others can kind of see what we're doing, and we can share our love for film with other individuals, while also maybe exposing them to some new stuff through our reviews and whatnot. But all that stuff aside, there'll be links for that in the description. But again, so, yeah, Caroline, thank you so much. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Hi, thank you for inviting me on your show. I am fine, thank you. Your introduction makes me sound very important and very, yeah. And so I'm impressed with myself.
You've done a lot. I mean, you have quite the career, and you're, you know, very, you have your production company, right? Which is Raya Films, which you have established with the director that you work with a lot, which is James Smith, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. Yeah. We both founded Raya Films back in 2004, predominantly making documentaries. And then we segued into feature film probably around 2009, 2010, something like that.
Okay. That's quite a while now. Here we are in 2023. And you guys, you and James, I believe Casting Kill is your fifth project that you've done together. But you have other stuff in the works. So you're pretty busy with your production company and all these other projects that you've got going on.
Yeah, we've been... Well, since 2015, when we shot our first feature film, our debut feature film, we've just been, apart from a bit of a, well, yeah, we've been trying to make films consistently since then, because our debut feature film, Do Something Jake, spent 3 years in post-production. That kind of like didn't keep the conveyor belt rolling as much as we liked, but and then the pandemic popped up, and that put a hiatus on things as well. But we've been trying to make movies consistently since then. We've been trying to make movies consistently since around 2012, but nothing, you know, we were trying to find proper money, but nothing materialized. So in the end, 2015, we just went forth and shot our feature film on pretty much no money, our debut feature film. So that's how we've been going so far.
But you were talking a little bit about your production company, your collaboration in that with James Smith. So do you mind telling us just a little bit more about that?
So Raya Films, we formed in 2004, predominantly to make documentaries, and so that's with James Smith, and he directs and I kind of write. And in that, back in the day, when we were doing documentaries, I was presenting, and then we sort of started to dabble in feature film around 2000, 2010, 2011, something like that, writing screenplays. And I absolutely found my forte writing screenplays. I absolutely loved it. And we tried to raise an actual budget for various feature films, but that was never forthcoming because we're nobodies and nobody wanted to trust their money with us. We got no track record. And we came close a couple of times, to be honest, started making connections with people, but those people, unfortunately, long story, but they turned out to be those rogues you hear about in the film industry. So that never materialized. In the end, 2015, we decided, right, let's just give it a go and try and make a film with no money. And so that's what we did. So we made our debut feature film, Do Something Jake, in 2015, and just continued moving on from there. From there on, it became, crowdfunding was becoming a thing, and more of a thing for filmmakers. So we were able to raise, a little bit of money for a couple of our other films. Never the big bucks, I'm afraid, but enough to sort of, get going on a feature and get them produced and post-produced and out there in the big wide world. So that's it in a nutshell.
So yeah, thank you for that. It's very, very interesting. So you made your first feature film, right, which you said was Do Something Jake. And so what was the response for that? I imagine, again, making a film on no budget, there's a lot of moving pieces. I'm sure it was extremely difficult to pull that off. So yeah, what was the response and what kind of encouraged you guys to, keep going? Let's make more films. Let's continue doing this extremely difficult work.
Well, there's something Jake, we shot in the Midlands of the UK. And we kind of treated it as a community project, in a way, even though it was a thriller, and we wanted it to be a commercial thriller. And we managed to, just get some really cool actors on board, including a guy and an American actor, Ed Berchtold from New York, and he flew across to play the main antagonist. And we shot the film in 3 weeks. And unfortunately, it took us 3 years in post-production because we had various problems with the music score and what was it? Just sound design. The first guy who came on for sound design wasn't quite to, getting it. So we amazingly found that some other people approached us to help out, and it was and they worked out really well. And when we finally finished the film, we premiered it in a big cinema, 286 seater cinema, I think, in the town that we shot the film. And we absolutely packed it out. It was amazing. It was the most terrifying and yet brilliant night. It really was. And we went on and we won an award for best feature film for it in a regional film awards, and it's now on Tubi, and a little plug there on Tubi, and it's done. Yeah, it's done really well. We had a really, really good response to it, and it's we're very I'm very proud of it. It's not perfect. It was our first feature film, but it gave us the confidence. Then, as you say, how did it encourage us to move on? Yes, it really gave us the confidence to move on and make some continue trying to climb the ladder and improve what we're doing and learning.
So, what about for you personally? How did you originally get started in media or in film? And what was that even like for you I assume, that you maybe uncovered some of your talents early in your life. Can you just kind of maybe give us, for you personally, how you even got started and what kind of compelled you to move in this direction?
Well, I guess it's an unconventional way I kind of got into this. I think when I was growing up, it was the 70s, and I was really into drama and acting. I was painfully shy, as a lot of actors are actually. I got into drama, and I secretly wanted to be an actor, but I never told anybody because I thought they'd laugh at me. So, fast forward a couple of decades, and my next big goal was to be a presenter, a television presenter in the realm of in the genre of natural history, wildlife, ancient history, evolution, that kind of thing. So I thought the way to get into that would be to write, and hence I started writing, and I got published. Did quite well. I got published in some pretty big magazines, print magazines. This was pre online days. This was
And
so
this is writing about nature, wildlife. At that time,
yeah.
this is what you were involved in, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Because I mean, it wasn't a, it was just it was a thing on the side. I mean, I never went to. I was a secretary. I was a secretary, worked in admin. I just jumped from one job to another, doing that kind of office stuff because I didn't enjoy it. So I kept moving around because I got bored. And on the side, I was trying to build this other career in writing and being, maybe, oh, then I'd be discovered as a television presenter. Of course, that didn't happen. But through contacts, I got invited to be on a television show where they is one of these shows where it was called I Want That House. It was where people go abroad and want to buy a property internationally. Because I knew the island of Tenerife very well in the Canary Islands, I was asked to go and be on this show, but through a contact. They wanted me to play the part of the realtor, which I'm not a realtor. I have not a clue about selling properties. But the actual realtor on the island didn't want to be on television. So I thought, oh yeah, okay, I'll do this. I can go and pretend. So I'm just going to show what kind of, how trustworthy these shows can be. Yeah, I thought I'd go and I could, I'd meet these TV people, I'd get and make contacts, I get a segue into the television industry, and I can, make my mark on and do what I wanted to do. And but it didn't work like that because it was just wasn't too impressed with the TV crew. They were very unprofessional. And in the end, just couldn't wait to finish. I couldn't wait to run away and just leave them behind and escape this thing we were going through. Anyway, we me and James, we decided, well, James has always been into photography. I've always been into the writing. Let's marry it up and see if we can make documentaries ourselves. And hence the documentary side of things came about. And we produced a couple of documentaries back in the day, ancient history, natural history, that kind of, oh, and extreme sports. Yeah, we were doing quite well there as well. And to make money, we were doing corporate stuff, commercial stuff, which unfortunately we didn't enjoy because it just took us right back into the kind of like the environment that we were trying to escape from in the first place, i.e. office work. How do you make, so people were selling fridges, how do you make fridges sound interesting? It wasn't a creative thing that we really wanted to get into. And then the recession hit and the bottom fell out of that market. And then so we started dabbling around with screenplays. And that's where we kicked off our narrative feature career.
It's interesting to me that you kind of went from documentaries and then into features, because I feel like, at least maybe I'm way off on this, but it feels to me like maybe making short films would have been a transition in between that before jumping into features? Was that, did you make any short films, or was that ever anything that you guys considered, or you just always knew it's features?
Well, yeah, you see, that would have been the sensible thing to do. Go and make a short film first and learn. And actually, that's what we did end up doing. We made a short film called we tried to make a film set in the city centre of London, like a thriller, like a corporate thriller. We were trying to get proper money for that. We'd written it, and that didn't happen again. You know, nobody's gonna fund our features because we haven't done anything. So we then said, okay, well, let's take that idea and turn it into a short film, and just go and make this short film. So we did make the short film first before we made the feature. Keep Up If You Can, and we had some amazing locations that were just given to us. These beautiful hotels in the center of London, and we made this little film. And you know, it's not an ideal film, but it got some good comments from the BBC when we submitted it to them, and so it got some nice comments from them. It got into the Rutger Hauer's Film Festival in Milan. That's it. And but the main thing is, I learned a hell of a lot about filmmaking, and that's why you make short films. But and then from there, yeah, we jumped right back into the deep end with features.
I mean, yeah, some of the best filmmakers, Quentin Tarantino, Paul Thomas Anderson, they're the first ones to say the best way to learn is to go out and shoot a film, right? And just try it and learn while you're doing it. It's very, on a personal level for me, it's very inspirational what you guys are doing and what you have done, where you have this love and this passion for screenwriting and James for, cinema and visuals. And you've just said, hey, we're gonna make our own path, and if someone doesn't want to support this, that's fine. Well, you shot things on phones. This latest casting kill, you shot it in 6 days, in the midst of COVID and obviously financial restrictions and so many things. And the fact that you're plugging away and you're doing it and you're going to these film festivals and getting your stuff out there is awesome and so encouraging and really, really inspirational. So I commend you guys for that. And so yeah, keep going.
I just say it's raining here really loudly. I don't know if you can pick that up, and I've just heard some thunder, which is fun. So,
Well, it is England, or London, right? I've heard that happens quite a bit. So let's see. I did, well, no, I won't go into that. I was gonna say, I did read an interview that you did for Horror Revolution in 2022, which was really interesting. But then there was also in your bio a really great story about when you went scuba diving and had a kind of a scary situation there that you were able to get out of. But so you're pretty adventurous, it sounds like. And
aside from a passion for cinema, I've always been very active in sports. Horseback riding, running, scuba diving, used to fly birds of prey as well. When I was a kid, I grew up in the New Forest in the in the southern England, and I was just like forever running around climbing trees and that. But yeah, the scuba diving incident was I started scuba diving because I love sharks. And I love sharks because I watched Jaws, and very controversial, but I watched Jaws. It's one of my favorite films, and I just became absolutely fascinated with these animals. And the more I learned about them, the more I learned they weren't these monsters that people think they are. So I took up scuba diving to because I wanted to see sharks. And I started, and I did a lot of diving off the south coast of England, and never saw any sharks. And then so I started going to Egypt. And on one trip, I went to southern Egypt, and we went to a reef called Elphinstone Reef. And I don't like going deep, but 30 meters is my limit. And they took me to 40 meters, and I was absolutely furious. And I was actually beginning to panic, and I was going to shoot to the surface, which would have killed me. Then I saw these sharks. I saw these beautiful, beautiful sharks, and it just stopped me thinking about shooting to the surface. And I just stayed there and I watched them. So I wrote an article for the Guardian newspaper about this, called "How Sharks Saved My Life." And so that documents what happened there. But I ran out of air down there. I had to buddy brief with the buddy, my partner, all the way back up. It's getting really loud, this rain now. I don't know if you can hear
I can hear it.
it.
It's okay. Yeah, if you wouldn't mind sending me the link to that article, I'd love to read it and then also post it in the description of this interview. Cool. So I guess now changing pace a little bit, I'd love to talk about the film. And then I have other questions that surround that, about your process. But definitely, so we'll get into that. But so as far as casting Pill, would you mind introducing that for us? Just telling us, just about what the movie's about.
Okay, so Casting Kill is it's a psychological horror slash thriller in with a very Hitchcockian vibe. It's been inspired by the works of Hitchcock, and it tells the story of a Hollywood casting director who comes to the UK and undertakes a kind of a sinister casting roadshow on the pretense of offering up Hollywood roles for actors in the big Hollywood blockbuster. And so he literally preys on actors, these young actors, or just looking to get their big break in the film industry. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell. The guy, Arthur Capstone, the antagonist, who's played by Rob Laird, is a complete psychopath, narcissistic. He's got mom issues, as you will see in the film, and these kind of like manifest itself. This kind of like thing manifests itself into this terrible kind of fetish. How he preys on certain people, and as well as being a fraud, a thief, he's and also quite a bit of a charmer as well. So he's a very complex character, and anyways, people seem to really love this character. So I think we've created somebody quite memorable here.
So my favorite aspect of the film was the sort of subtext of commentary on this element of the industry. Again, I'm sure it's exaggerated in your story, but there does seem to be this underlying sense of sort of your version of maybe things that you've seen or experienced or just what you know about kind of at times the nature of what might happen, and the dynamics, right, between perhaps these vulnerable actors, right, who are so hungry for their big shot, to even just to get to make a living doing what they love, and yet on the other side of it, at times, right, this maybe dark or sinister idea of individuals who might be, looking to prey and take advantage of these individuals in various ways. I mean, sometimes we've kind of seen that play out, with individuals like Harvey Weinstein and whatnot. So, for me, that was really the most interesting part was sort of that commentary. Would you like to speak a little bit to that? Was that sort of an intentional thing that you were kind of utilizing to build this world and to build, especially the character of Arthur Capstone?
Yeah, I think the whole kind of subject matter of how these actors are put themselves in a very vulnerable position with somebody who they deem to have a lot of power. It's almost like a satirical look on the film industry as a whole. Obviously, yeah, Weinstein being the obvious one, where and it's, you know, it's been going on for decades, you know, since the beginning of cinema. You've had the casting couch, haven't you? So, you know, the young actresses who are desperate to get a role in a big movie, they come to Hollywood and they get exploited, and they think they're gonna make it big if they go along with what these people in power want them to do. But it's also a reflection on the BS that is put across in the film industry. We've certainly been to quite a few seminars here in the UK where people have just like spouted this rhetoric that just doesn't, you know, they're talking about incubating and nurturing and none of it, and they're saying all these words, but none of it really means anything. It's just like they're reading from a manual. And it's all very cynical, you know, in our view, in our opinion. It's all very cynical. And certainly in the UK, they can be very there can be a lot of nepotism going on. But no, it's just in terms of our experience in this, I mean, haven't really had much experience, you know, being in that kind of position, but we've certainly been in the position of auditioning people. And on the flip side of the fence, we've had some very crazy funny experiences where, you know, actors come in and what they say and how they behave, and we put some of that into the film. One we didn't put into the film was where a guy came along and he was in the audition eating his lunch. It's like, you should have had your lunch before or after. But you know, some of the things people say, you know, I would just want to be in a film that,
yeah,
one of the characters says, I just want to be in a film that it's got to be a story that needs to be told, you know. They're trying so hard to impress the person they're auditioning for, whereas really they should just be natural and be themselves, but also be very, very on guard, because as we know, there's a lot of sharks in this industry. And you've got to be careful. We've been the victim of some of these people who have said one thing and mean something completely else, and have tried to exploit or steal from us and things like that. So just be on guard to see, you know, who can you really trust anybody? This is the thing. Can you really trust anybody? Just be aware.
And I mean, I love that the combination of the story that you've written in this film, along with, again, your actual life and your company and what you're doing, when you combine them both, I love, you know, that, again, it's also saying, like, look, there's alternatives. You know, you want to make films or you want to act. You know, Hollywood is obviously the big machine, but it's not the only way, you know, and it might take you a very long time, or you might never make millions and millions and become a household name, but, you know, do you want celebrity or do you want to make films? You know, do you want to be creative? And if so, then you don't necessarily have to put yourself in a position where you're going to be exploited and maybe even much worse. Like, there's other ways to go about this, and there's other people who are doing interesting things and making films that are alternatives to just succumbing to, you know, being prey to a predator. That's just going to take advantage of the position that you're in. I love that message, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I mean, it's the same with filmmakers. You know, if you know, I hear stories where some indie filmmakers have made a really great movie, and then the Hollywood producers pop along and say, yeah, okay, we're going to give you a 3-picture deal. And then they go and make their 3-picture deal with these Hollywood producers, and it turns out to be a nightmare because, you know, that these guys are all controlling, and maybe these indie filmmakers haven't got the, I don't know, the experience or confidence to stand up to them and say, no, I'm not going to do it your way, we're going to do it our way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it happens, you know, it's something to be aware of for everybody in the industry.
Yeah. So as far as the story and the script, how did this come about? When did you write it? I believe it in that interview that I read, you said that oftentimes in your collaborations with James, he'll kind of work up a treatment or share an idea with you, and then you kind of take that and flesh that out into a screenplay. How did this one specifically come about?
Well, James pitched this idea to me because we're you know, we're always looking for how can we can make films on a very small budget, but mm-hmm. that's really effective. So he pitched this idea to me of this guy who preys on actors desperate to win their big break. It's all about auditions and it's set in one location. Now, in the past, when I've tried to write films set in one location, it's never worked. I just like mm-hmm. my mind explodes and I start to add locations, add cast, and it's just mm-hmm. myself, it was a right mess.
Yeah.
It's very expensive. Uh-huh. Anyway, we managed to do it with this one, and we raised some money through crowdfunding, just enough to shoot, but obviously, yeah, we raised the money throughout the pandemic. So when it came time that we were able to shoot Cast and Kill, it was at the trail end of the pandemic when, you know, people had just been let out and we were allowed to go out and do things again mm-hmm. together. But there was still a lot of restrictions in place. So we decided, okay, we got a tiny amount of money. COVID is a big problem. So we thought, let's jump in the deep end and make this film in 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what all we could afford to do.
Okay.
But also it had the added benefit of if anybody got struck down with COVID, hopefully we would have got as much in the can as possible before this happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's pretty much what we did. Yeah, what James normally does is write a loose treatment mm-hmm. and then I kind of jump in and flesh it all out.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes back to James and he'll do the director thing and rewrite. But we work on it together. Once I've got the basic first draft of the treatment, then we then work, you know, bounce it back and forth and work on it together until we're both happy.
Yeah,
and that's how we work generally.
Can you speak a little bit towards just indie films in general? My perception that the average moviegoer is not super familiar with indie films and indie filmmaking, right? It's probably going to be your big budget Hollywood studio films, right, for the average film goer. And I think that that indie films are challenge, or they have the challenge when it comes to that type of audience of sometimes being judged in comparison to a studio mm-hmm. film, right? Without maybe someone realizing, hey, we only had 6 days. Hey, we only had $1,500 or something, you know, whatever the case may be. You know, and so I think sometimes someone will be exposed to a film. And I would say that I've probably been guilty of this in the past as well, right? And maybe just criticizing and complaining about certain elements without realistically taking those things into consideration to do sort of a fair comparison or a fair critique of a film with all those limitations, you know? So does that make sense? Like in the question that I'm asked, could you just kind of speak a little bit into that when in promotion of your film too, and in the work that you're doing specifically in as an independent filmmaker?
Well, I think, the film landscape is improving in that respect, in that more and more people are getting becoming passionate about indie film. I mean, don't get me wrong, they still love to see the Top Guns of this world and the big shiny productions, you know, produced in Hollywood and or elsewhere. But indie film is growing rapidly, I think, is with the technology that we've got at our disposal, it's more affordable, more people are being able to have these opportunities to produce films for very little money, but produce them really well. And I've been quite pleasantly surprised that, that there's a huge audience out there for independent movies. And I think there's some people out there that will only watch independent movies. I mean, not a huge amount, but there's still some people that really, you know, love to watch these more grassroots guerrilla stuff. And I think it helps when you know, we've had some real successes in the past with El Mariachi and other, you know, kind of some of the Blumhouse stuff and a lot of the horror stuff. I mean, the horror genre is for independent film is huge. It's just enormous. And I'm talking horror in terms of the slashers and the zombies and the vampires, not our cute little Hitchcockian film over here. But I think it's improving big time. In the UK, it's very disappointing that the cinemas don't want to screen independent films. They just want to have the big tentpole Hollywood productions, so they won't support independent film producers, even though some of the cinemas are independent cinemas themselves. So that's disappointing here. I believe it's a bit better in the US. I'm still researching that. You've got the four wall culture over there, which makes it more, you know, there's more opportunity for independent filmmakers to get their movies in cinemas, in theatres. And as long as you can get the fans along to watch these films, then that's win-win all round, I think. But sometimes I say on social media that I don't know if it's true or not, but I like to think that Hollywood is looking at two independent film to see which way to go themselves. So it's almost as if independent filmmakers are driving what's happening in Hollywood, you know, to see what people want, what the audience, what's the appetite of the audience at the time. So it's on the rise.
Yeah, to your point, I mean, as far as, I mean, they should be, and they better be paying attention, because now when anyone can record a movie on their phone, I mean, you're gonna uncover so much hidden talent out there, and especially after now a few generations of people that have been living with the internet and have been consuming, so I mean, there's so much good content these days through streaming services, through, you know, brilliant shows and films. So it should be a sort of breeding ground for amazing talent. And I think that supporting independent films, independent film companies through crowdfunding and through all these areas is a great way to really invest. I mean, right now also there's just, we're, you know, in Hollywood, I think there's kind of like, people I think are getting a little bit fed up with superhero stuff and remakes and sequels and all these IPs and franchises, that it's like, I think there's it's also creating a space for originality, right? And creativity and people seeking out something that is different than just this money making machine, you know, that we're kind of seeing.
Yeah, I agree. I get really annoyed when I see something that was perfectly brilliant back in the day is being remade. Yeah. They're remaking Salem's Lot, and I'm thinking, nah, why are you doing that? The original was complete. I know it was a miniseries that was then stitched together to a movie, but it's still, I don't think you'd be able to capture that kind of, for me, I don't think you'd be able to capture that kind of atmosphere again, you know, with a reboot. And it's like, they remade Point Break, you know, what was that about? So I agree. I think it's Hollywood, it's all about, it's a commercial business, and we get that. But originality and original screenplays, original adaptations. It's what makes a movie world go round. Driven by us indie folks.
So how big was the production team on set for this film?
Oh, tiny. It had James was cinematographer and cameraman and director. I was producer, script supervisor, and audio technician, and just general catering everything. And then we had a guy who, John Waller, he was great. He was like a production assistant, and he stepped in with a lot of the script supervision as well, and helped with locations and organizing things. And then we had other people dip in and out. We had another production assistant come along, Gillian Tully. She came along on the Sunday when we had a huge amount of people on set, actors on set, and I needed help corralling them all. So, but that was about it, I think. Am I missing anybody? Oh God, I'm gonna. I'm gonna come away and think, oh, I've forgotten somebody. it was tiny. Most of us were wearing a million hats all at the same time.
Yeah, it's like you said, tiny. But as far as the cast, you still got quite a few actors in there. In different. There's quite a few roles, in this. I was kind of, again, with your history as a presenter, and you know, you did the film Agent Kelly, right? And so with your act, I was surprised that I didn't see you even in the background in this, or any, at least that I'm not sure if I did. Is that intentional? Like do you try to avoid at this point having to be on camera? Are you just maybe more focused on the producing and the screenwriting, or are you still up for, you know, playing roles and acting as well?
Yeah, I'm happy to get my face in front of the camera occasionally. With Agent Kelly, I jumped in front of the camera because I was cheap and willing to have myself thrown into the surf in Spain and beaten up by a crazy Spaniard, which was great fun. Loved it. On Casting Kill, is like, I think there wasn't really a place. There wasn't a slot for me, and I never really considered putting myself in front of the camera there. I was too busy with other things. I just have to throw in one crew member I did forget, Peter Tilly, who was on the Clapper Loader. Brilliant there from day one. Thank you, Peter. The last film another film we're going to be released soon is a comedy called Best Geezer. Okay. I did give myself a little role in that one, mainly because she was such a brilliant character. I thought, I'm nabbing that one, as no one else is going to have that. So I'm just going to be selfishly jump in there, and that was great fun. Totally different character. So
you wrote that one as well?
Yeah, it was a collaboration between myself and James. I kind of, like, James came up with the diet. Well, I think it was my idea originally. I take credit for that. And then but then James came up with the treatment, and then together we wrote this crazy comedy set in Essex. That's coming out. That's going to be premiered in June, on the 11th of June. And that's huge. That's going to be a big fun production. People are getting very excited about it anyway.
Well, I was curious if that's in that interview that you did for the Horror Revolution. Is that you were teasing a comedy? This was back in 2022, but you kind of mentioned this comedy that you guys were working on that, you know, had a potential, you know, to even maybe draw some Hollywood names or something like that. But it kind of seemed like a big comedy that you had in development or was soon going to be. So I wanted to ask you about that, and I wonder if that was the geezer that you were referring to.
I don't know. It might have been. We do have other comedies that are definitely big productions, but It may well have been. We were talking about Giza and thinking we were going to get a lot of money for it and bring in some names, but that didn't happen, as usual.
Not yet,
But
not yet, at least.
yeah, we got a bit of money from crowdfunding, but we found some amazing actors in the vicinity where I am now, and from London and Essex. And yeah, who needs names when you've got such up and coming talent?
Well, listen, in Casting Kill, I was I felt like Dom, Jack Forsythe, he really stood out to me as really, really talented. Is this the first film that you've done with him, or have you worked with him in the past, and do you see a potential to continue working with him? I thought he stood out and jumped out of the screen as really naturally talented.
Cool, that's really good. Yes. The role of Dominic was a very interesting one, and the way we cast Jack was a very interesting one because Dominic was originally supposed to be kind of like a cool French guy, really laid back and cool and funky kind of dude. But the actor who we had lined up for that couldn't commit in the end, and he dropped out. And so the guy was supposed to be French speaking, but then James found Jack, and who is fluent Spanish speaking, and we cast Jack literally 2 weeks before we were starting to film, so it was really fast. And he was amazing because as you've seen, there's a lot of dialogue in this film, and he really, really nailed that dialogue really quickly. So he just like literally jumped in at the deep end and delivered that performance. So very, very happy accident there. And but yeah, no, I think he's got a big future in front of him. He's doing a lot of pretty high-end stuff in television, I think. And he's also getting good roles in movies. So, well, I don't know. I mean, I'd like to work with him again in the future, but whether we can afford him or not by the time we'll see.
Well, and Rob Laird too, as
Yeah.
Arthur Capstone, you certainly in writing this role asked a lot of him, right? Because he's like multiple, without giving away too much, but he's dealing with some mental health issues. I think you mentioned some mother issues that come up, and a lot of kind of just psychosis. So, how did you feel about what he was able to pull off in that role?
Oh, he really nailed it, didn't he? I think he just didn't seem to have any fear. We kept saying, okay, Rob, are you prepared to do this? You're prepared to do that? And he's like, yeah, sure. I mean, he's an ex-rugby player, an ex-international rugby player, so maybe he's just like used to just going for it. So yeah, he really did a lot of really great research into the character, and we gave him a lot of pointers into the kind of character we're looking for. So he really nailed it, and he's had a lot of great reviews for his performance. So we're super, super proud of that.
You mentioned both here and in the interview that you did that there was a big this is a Hitchcockian type of horror. Was when you set out to write this, is that what you were aiming for, or did that kind of just come about just naturally from the story that you were trying to tell?
Yeah, I guess we were aiming for it because we don't do slashers and zombies and gore. I can't do that. I leave that to other people who do it really well. My genre, and I've always loved Hitchcock movies. I grew up watching movies from all eras, from all nations, and Hitchcock, of course, is a master. And I just love the way he can portray fear and horror without actually showing anything graphic. It's all very, very clever storytelling, camera angles, editing, and that was that. So that was how we definitely engineered it that way, so that we could try and deliver something that was, you know, very tense.
Yeah.
Without showing any, and tense and disturbing, but without showing anything graphic.
Yeah, I was going to say, definitely no gore, but there was certainly a scene in this that really made me kind of look away. Yeah, well, that my question is, why toes?
Well, we won't get too many spoilers here, but I kind of stole that from another screenplay I wrote, which was yeah, it's a bit of a story behind that, and this, another kind of like character in another story that had this fetish. Let's put it that way.
I don't want to give. I'll leave that as sort of a teaser.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty sick, isn't it? But they...
That was the one part where I was like, oh boy, because I like psychological, and I'm not a big kind of gore, you know, type of horror film fan, but that one was definitely a surprise. Yeah, almost, you know, pretty much wrapping up here. What did you feel like the final product was? Did it change a lot from the original screenplay that you wrote, or was it pretty close to, you know, what you had envisioned as you wrote this?
Yeah, well, the screenplay went through many iterations because, you know, it changed every time we were trying to find a certain location, but then we couldn't find it. And then other locations fell through, and then we finally found the locations in London, this subterranean studio in London, and so then we tweaked the screenplay so that it would match that location, and then we did pretty much film as exactly we had on the script. There was like one or two alterations as we went along, but it was pretty much as was written. Again, shooting in such a small amount of time kind of like allows you to do that, I guess.
Okay. I have a few more questions, but I just want to check in. How are you doing on time? You're being very generous with your time, but we can,
I'm fine. It says it's 5 minutes left in the meeting, so
I know. I think it just automatically made it for an hour, so I don't think it's going to close out. But
that's fine.
I just have a few more. So, cool. Who would you? I mean, we mentioned Hitchcock, obviously, and I think that you're a pretty big horror fan. But who would you say maybe are some of your biggest influences?
Ooh, that's a tricky one. I mean, I guess in terms of film, I do love movies from back in the day. One of my favorite films, definitely not a horror, is Some Like It Hot, which is a Billy Wilder film. Absolutely hilarious. In the horror genre, another favorite is The Omen, with Lee Remick and Gregory Peck. That kind of thing really, really is scary and so atmospheric. I just love films and filmmakers who can portray atmosphere and realism. You know, there's a lot of filmmakers maybe nowadays, and you know, a lot of films that come out nowadays that are very shiny and just too perfect. And they don't feel real, and hence I can't really kind of buy into it. You know, I don't feel the fear or whatever. So I like films. Another of my favorites is Deliverance from the 70s, which again is terrifying because it just feels so real. It looks real. You know, it's a very simple story. Brilliant, brilliant central cast and a terrifying plot. It's just really strikes home to me, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of, you know, who influences me. It's not really who, it's like, it's just, there's such a wide gamut of different styles that I like,
mm-hmm.
and filmmaking mm-hmm. styles and genres mm-hmm. that I like that tend to strike home with me.
Okay, that's great. So of the different hats that you wear, you know, with producing and screenplay writing and acting, which is your favorite and which is the most challenging?
I don't know. I guess because I don't do it so much, acting could be the most challenging, because mm-hmm. I'm always kind of like, I haven't acted in anybody else's production, so I'm only ever acted in our own production. So, mm-hmm. and I find that challenging because I'm also producing mm-hmm. and trying to deal with everything else over here, whilst mm-hmm. sitting over the others, you know, over here trying to learn my lines and stuff. I do love writing. Screenplay writing is it just feels right to me. I just feel comfortable and natural doing it. It's just I feel at home writing, mm-hmm. and I'm, you know, always coming up with ideas, and you know, you get excited when you get a new idea and you can't wait to write it down and
mm-hmm.
kind of like see where you can go with it.
Yeah.
So but yeah, I mean, to be honest, I like it all. Production okay. is ironically, you know, because as I said earlier, my previous work was in admin and secretarial work, and mm-hmm. I never enjoyed it. I hated it, but all that experience I'm finding so useful now that mm. I'm producing films, because it's just all those skills, you know, I'm able to utilize. So
mm-hmm.
I'm glad to say none of it was wasted. It wasn't mm-hmm. wasted time after all. So yeah, the whole package is very, very fulfilling to take mm-hmm. the bare bones of a story and then see it right through to the big screen. It's, mm-hmm. It's incredibly, incredibly rewarding.
Mm-hmm. So we've been mainly focusing on Casting Kill, which we want people to watch, right? And it can currently be found on Amazon Prime. I rented it, great quality for $1.99, so well worth the money there, dollars, I guess.
Yeah.
And but you're currently, and there, you know, you have also this back catalog, especially Tubi's awesome. And I think it's picking up a lot of steam. Like, a lot of people are seeing, like, hey, you can watch these, and just their library, I think, is what's really getting people. There's these movies on Tubi that you can't get anywhere else. So I think it's a combination at just the right time, because it's really growing in popularity, especially among film fans. But, you know, so you have this whole other back catalog, and then you have these upcoming films like The Best Geezer. And then you're currently crowdfunding for The Finca, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's something that people can right now get involved with, supporting that. Mm-hmm. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that one? Because you'll be traveling to Spain to film that one, right? Very cool.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time in Spain, and hence Agent Kelly was shot there. But we've been wanting to make The Finca for many, many years. And we finally thinking, right, okay, now we're ready to do it. We've got a really cool... We've managed to hone down the story so that we can shoot it affordably and quickly. And we found an amazing location up in the mountains of Andalusia. And it's a psychological thriller / horror. So again, sort of more thriller than horror, but still with a pretty tense, very tense elements. And thunder, that's fortuitous. And it's about an American woman who travels to Spain to visit the property of her that she's inherited from her mother, who died and she's been estranged from. And so she visits this property, this finca up in the mountain. It's really isolated. I mentioned Deliverance earlier. It's kind of like got that kind of element to it. It's got that mm-hmm. isolation and the kind of scary local element thing going mm-hmm. on. So she gets there. She's she's jet lagged, she's messed up, she's, you know, she's, and things start to happen in the thinker that, you know, thinking, is this due to my jet lag and the fact I'm really tired, or is this like actually really happening? So so a lot of psychological elements going on there, but beautiful, stunning locations. And we want to shoot it this year, so if we can get that crowdfunding, as much money as we possibly can in the crowdfunding pot, then yeah, the sooner we can do that, the sooner we can get out there and shoot this our next movie.
Yeah, awesome. So if you, if maybe afterward, if at some point, if you can send me links for people to check out, you know, Raya Films, again, your back catalog, stuff that you're doing, and especially how, you know, how we can all, you know, you support and help to finance, you know, these projects. That sounds really exciting. The Finca sounds really cool. I like that premise. And it sounds like there's some really interesting elements there. I love the approach with psychological thrillers. I find those, again, like as you mentioned, maybe a little bit more grounded and realistic, you know, in the sense, not that the other ones aren't good as well, but I kind of connect with those a little bit more and just find it a little bit more fascinating. But I'll let you go. I won't, again, you've been so generous with your time, and it's been such a joy and such a pleasure chatting with you, just hearing about, you know, your history and how you arrived at this point, you know, the talents that you've been given and the way that you're using them. Just want to encourage you guys to, you know, keep up the great work, keep on going, keep making original films, you know, getting them supported. I'll definitely do my part in helping with the crowdfunding. And I hope that, you know, through our little podcast, hopefully it'll provide you some exposure and get you some views and just some attention for what you guys are doing. So again, the film is Casting Kill. It's really fun. Again, you can watch it on, it's currently on Amazon Prime, and I don't know if it's, is it on Tubi right now, or is it, but it, or it's going to be?
It's going to be on Tubi.
Yeah.
I know the trailer is up on Tubi at the moment.
Okay.
So hit the trailer, get those algorithms going on the trailer.
Yeah, I also, for sure. We'll have a link to that in the description as well. And I did want to say, I love your posters and like your artwork, both for Casting Kill, and I think there is one for the Finca too that I saw. Really cool. So whoever's doing that, or whoever you're working with on the artwork for these films, is doing a really great job. I think they're really cool.
That's great. That's great to know. Thank you. Yeah. We'll keep using him. He's a great guy.
Cool. Yeah, and hopefully we'll keep in touch. And again, anything that I can do or any way that I can help, please let me know. And hopefully maybe we'll meet again and do it again to see how things are going with the Finca, or when you're ready to roll that out. I definitely will be following The Best Geezer to see how that goes. Comedy is one of my favorite genres, so I'll definitely be looking forward to checking that out. But Caroline, thank you so much for your time. Send our love to James as well. And we'll be following and hoping to hear from you again soon. All right.
Awesome.
Take care.
Thank you, Juan. Thank you.
Right.
Ciao.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, I think we're done.